What is up, you idle creatures? Welcome to No Holds Barred, the Shakespeare podcast. Shakespeare would have listened to. I'm Dan Bollier.
And I'm Kevin Condardo. We are back this week with this month's So You're Going to See episode. The idea of these episodes is that it's something that you would listen to in transit to a Shakespearean production so that you can be the best little audience member that you can be.
An audio version of the dramaturgical notes, if you will.
So, hopefully you'll enjoy this episode as you head out to see Julius Caesar.
Here we go.
The first thing we need to cover before we get into this episode is a quick synopsis of the play, so you at least know the story. Dan, kick us off.
So, the play opens with Julius Caesar returning to Rome in triumph from the civil wars. While he is on the way to the celebrations, a soothsayer tells Caesar to beware the Ides of March. But Caesar ignores the soothsayer and goes on to enjoy the celebrations.
Meanwhile, behind him, Cassius notices that Brutus isn't celebrating with everyone else and asks him, "Hey, what's up?" Brutus explains that he's worried that Caesar may be named king and he's going to become too powerful for the good of Rome. Cassius agrees, also mentioning that there's no reason for one very mortal man to have that degree of power.
Casca, another senator, meets with Cassius that night, sharing news of several very strange omens he's seen in the streets, which, combined with the news that the Senate has decided to name Caesar king the next day, makes him think making Caesar king might be a mistake. They call together all the possible conspirators, including Brutus, and they decide to kill Caesar, but only Caesar, the next day.
On the other side of town, Caesar's wife, Calpurnia, has been having terrible dreams, and she wakes up and begs Caesar not to go to the capital the next day. He blows her off, and this is a mistake.
Caesar arrives at the capital and is greeted by all of his friends, who proceed to surround him and stab him to death.
Yeah, that'll happen.
The conspirators all put their hands in Caesar's blood as proof they are all in this together. They call for Mark Antony to join them so they can explain why they've done what they did, and Antony agrees to lay low until Brutus has explained to the citizens why they did what they did, asking only for permission to give Caesar's funeral oration in exchange. Since Brutus will speak to the people first, he sees no problem with this request. This is a mistake.
Brutus gets up in front of the crowd and objectively explains the reasons for Caesar's assassination. The mob is like, "Yeah, okay, we get it." Then Antony gets up and passionately remembers all of the great things Caesar did for Rome and what a great guy he was, and kind of goes into what kind of ungrateful garbage human being you'd need to be to want him dead. And the crowd is like, "Oh yeah, wait a second," and gets really fired up and wants the heads of all of the conspirators. Brutus and Cassius quickly catch the first train out of Rome.
Antony, left in Rome without the conspirators, forms a triumvirate with Lepidus and Octavius Caesar and assume command of the Roman Empire. They begin plotting their impending war with Cassius and Brutus, who have separately met and are somewhat secretly disgusted by each other, but need to put on a unified front as they go to war.
As Brutus and Cassius plan a great battle at Philippi, Brutus is visited by the ghost of Caesar, who tells him they will meet again there. Brutus has a sneaking suspicion that this ghost visit isn't a great sign.
A great battle ensues! While Brutus rushes against and secures a victory over Octavius, Cassius is overwhelmed by Antony's troops. At the last moment, Cassius frees his slave Pindarus on the condition that Pindarus stabs him before he leaves. Pindarus is happy to comply, and Cassius dies.
Eventually, the united Octavius-Antony front is too powerful, and Brutus is overwhelmed. As the troops close in on him, Brutus begs any of his followers to kill him. Finally, Strato agrees to hold his sword while Brutus falls on it. Antony and Octavius enter just after Brutus dies and speak nicely of him, acknowledging that he alone of the conspirators did it because he thought it was the right thing to do. And that is Julius Caesar. now that you know what you'll be watching, we're going to take a few minutes to talk about where Julius Caesar falls in Shakespeare's personal timeline and what was happening in the world when it was written. Daniel.
Yes, so this was written in 1599, which was a pretty good year for Shakespeare.
A very good year.
He wrote Henry V, Julius Caesar, As You Like It, and Hamlet in 1599.
Not bad.
Not a bad year. So, a little game, recognized game. If you really want to dig in on this year, check out A Year in the Life of William Shakespeare, 1599, by Jim Shapiro.
Friend of the pod.
Great friend of the pod. But some of the major things that you need to know if you're just driving there now and can't read a book in the next 20 minutes.
Right.
Include stuff like, I think Essex is really important to talk about.
Sure, yep.
The Earl of Essex, on March 12th of 1599, he is appointed the Lord Lieutenant of Ireland by Elizabeth, the first of England. On April 23rd, Essex arrives in Dublin at the head of 16,000 troops, which is the largest army ever seen in Ireland. Also Shakespeare's birthday.
Mm.
So interesting. Happy birthday. Just conspiracy theorists. Mm-hmm. You know, this is also one of the plays that includes the line, "This is my birthday."
Right.
So there's some stuff there. And then September 21st, the first reported performance of this play in the Globe. And then September 28th, so just 7 days later, Essex arrives back in England, disobeying the Queen's strict orders. Hmm. So we're talking about an Irish rebellion, and then the person the Queen's put in charge disobeying her within the same week of a play about disobeying a tyrant leader.
Right, combined with not only Essex, but also the Catholics have just been routed out of England, or not just, but recently routed out of England, and with Elizabeth in her waning years and no successor in place, there are a lot of fears of the Spanish coming in to assassinate the monarchy and taking over and placing a Catholic on the throne. So assassination and overthrow of a monarch with no successor immediately in place is all very hot. On the docket. For Shakespeare specifically, this play was probably the first play written to open the Globe, with evidence being that there are violent thunderstorms both in 1-3 and 2-2, which is probably Shakespeare showing off his new toys.
Oh, fun.
That he has a thunder sheet, and he's like, look at all this stuff.
Check this out.
I can do this now.
Right. There are some cool, when you think about the year with Henry V and Hamlet both being written in the same year, there's some meta theater where in Henry V's chorus, there's a line like to the senators of the antique Rome, with the plebeians swarming at their heels, go forth and fetch the conquering Caesar in.
Mm-hmm.
And then also Polonius talks about, like, I was in a play once. I played Caesar.
Mm-hmm.
Brutus killed me.
Yeah.
And then Hamlet's response is, it was a brute part of him to kill, so capital a calf there.
Mm-hmm.
And the actor playing Hamlet probably also played Brutus.
Oh, right.
Would have been Burbage, being like, that guy sucks.
Right. The other inside baseball item here is that the English calendar was about 2 weeks off from the calendar of the rest of Rome because of acknowledgement of, like, leap years and all that stuff.
Sure.
So, and they had recently come back in line because, really, it throws a whole monkey wrench in your shipping schedules when it's like, it'll arrive on March 15th. And it's like, your March 15th or my March 15th?
Right.
So they had just adjusted over, but, like, all the calendars hadn't been caught up yet.
Okay.
So the audience would know the play Act One takes place on the Feast of Lupercal, which is February 15th, and then the second day of the play is the Ides of March, which is March 15th, and so that morning, I believe it's Brutus walks out and asks what day it is, and someone says it's the 1st of March, and he's like, is it? Which one?
So interesting.
There's a running goof of, like, I don't know what day it is.
I have no idea what
I mean. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah, so that's a little bit of context for the history of Julius Caesar at the time that it was written. This is where we identify what we consider to be the most prominent theme in the play, and particular places where you may see it come up. Dan has chosen his three favorites, and I'll pick mine of those three for us to dig in on. So, Dan, what are our finalists?
So the finalists for best theme in Julius Caesar, loyalty, rebellion, and heroism. Loyalty, rebellion, and heroism.
Let's talk about loyalty.
Sweet.
Because I think you see some various types of loyalty in this play.
Okay.
You know, you start with Brutus's whole action, and even Octavius and Antony point this out at the end. he has no real personal beef with Caesar.
Sure.
His loyalty is to Rome.
Right.
And so he bumps off Caesar because he thinks that's what is best for Rome.
Right.
Everyone else kind of has personal beefs against Caesar. So, like, it's his loyalty to do this thing that he thinks in a way is wrong, but is right for the country.
Right.
So that's one type of loyalty. You then have Antony's, you know, more traditional personal friendship loyalty.
Yes.
To Caesar in defending him, in giving his eulogy, and then in picking up his cause and his, really, his political position afterwards. So there's that loyalty. And then I think there's also a different loyalty that Octavius has.
Yes.
You know, Octavius being Caesar's nephew, like, he was a distant relative that Caesar handpicked to be like, you're my successor.
Oh, interesting.
So when he gets plopped in here, like, he's not really terribly loyal to Antony. Like, they're not really, and he's not even terribly loyal to Caesar. Like, Antony is more loyal to Caesar.
Right.
But
right.
Octavius is loyal to Rome and his role as, like, leader of Rome, and we see more of it when we get into Antony and Cleopatra. But
yeah.
I think his interest in this war is different than Antony's is. It's almost closer to Brutus's.
Right.
But
it's interesting, too, to think about the loyalty, the wives.
Sure.
The loyalty of the husbands to the wives in the play.
Right.
That they both make strong cases of, like, please, am I not your wife?
Right.
Don't you owe me some loyalty as well?
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I think these are two of the most interesting wives in the canon. In terms of, they have very small scenes, and it's too bad because they do bring up major themes in both of those. Like, those scenes are overflowing with thematic imagery.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I'm right here. I gave myself this gash. Please don't go today.
Right.
Please don't. But it gets back to that idea of Roman honor, right?
Right.
Like, that loyalty to...
It's Caesar's loyalty to Rome that he can't take the day off.
Right.
You know?
Yes. Yeah, so even if I knew I have to die, that is an honorable death.
Yeah. Or even when he arrives at... When Caesar arrives at the Capitol, there's a guy who has the letter who's like, you're going to get assassinated today.
Right.
And he goes to hand him the letter, and Caesar's like, is this about me or is this about Rome? And the guy's like, it's about you. And he's like, Rome's business comes first.
Right.
And it's like, this one might...
That also affects Rome.
Then Rome. This is about Rome. And he's gone. It's like, oh, wait.
I misspoke.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, that sense of how does loyalty exist in this world after you've just witnessed everyone meet in the middle of the night and go out and stab the leader?
Who liked.
Right?
Right.
It's like, how does anyone in this place sleep?
Yeah.
It's like, who is, even in the end, people are, you know, kill me here. It's like, nope, I'd rather kill myself.
Yeah, right.
It's like,
no loyalty among thieves, but plenty of loyalty as a thematic device in Julius Caesar. In this section of the show, we choose which non-title characters we would most want to play in this piece and explain why in 2 minutes or less. I won the coin flip before the show.
Garbage.
And I've elected to go first. So, I think... I would love to play Cassius, but I don't have a sufficiently lean and hungry look, and I don't think I ever will, so I'm not going to play Cassius.
Okay.
I would like to be Brutus, which is probably a much bigger role than I usually take in these things.
Yeah.
But it is in my kind of wheelhouse in terms of parts that I like, because he's objectively correct.
Right.
Which are my favorite dudes.
Technically right.
Or technically right is the best kind of right.
Right.
That, like, he gets up and he's like, God, I really, I know this is the right thing to do. And I know, Cassius, you're just doing this because you're a dick.
Right.
And I know, like, I don't agree with you guys why you're doing this. But I know in my heart, I have this conviction that this is the right thing to do for Rome.
Right.
And, like, that conflict is really interesting. Even as he's going through it, and he's like, oh, this sucks so much.
Yeah.
But it's like, there's a lot there. And even, like, his speech where he comes out and is like, X's and O's, chalkboard, like, objectively.
Yeah.
When you weigh all the factors, while this was grisly, it was the objectively correct thing to do.
Right.
So I hope you enjoy my presentation today on why we killed your favorite dude. And I'm sure you'll all understand. And it's like, I feel like I would be able to tap into that. And like, Brutus being off. It's a shame that Shakespeare writes that Brutus leaves. Like, he doesn't even stick around. You know, he's like, and I'm going to leave while Mark Antony talks to you now. Right. Like, I would love to have, like, imagine what a great acting moment it would be if it wasn't explicitly outlined in the text, or outlawed in the text. If Brutus is like, and here's Mark Antony, and Brutus, like, stands behind him, like, the vice president at the State of the Union. And so, like, you see him standing over Antony's shoulder, like, making funeral sympathy face.
Yeah.
And then, like, as it spirals out of control, he's like, and you get to watch this actor just die on stage as he realizes what a horrific political mistake he's made.
I wonder if that's why, I mean, that is pretty much the definition of upstaging. So I wonder if that's why,
maybe
that's why it's like, you can't have Brutus on stage.
Right, because you'd be watching him just get his ass handed to him like, in this speech.
Yeah, or maybe. If it's, is that Brutus being like, I'm such a good guy that I'm going to give you, I'm giving you the room.
I think that's what it is. And also then, narratively, it gives him time to get away.
Right. I think that's what I've always thought of at first is like the powder. And here's Antony. I'm out of here.
Bye. Like, yeah. Have a good time.
But it's interesting if it's like, no, this is just honorable to give you the space.
Yeah. I think it could be played either way. So yeah, that's it. Yeah. I would be Brutus.
Very nice. Actually, would very much like to see your Brutus.
Available.
Yeah, right. I guess since Julius Caesar is now off the board. And Brutus is taken. This is one of those plays where there's just so many good roles.
Mm-hmm.
You can have Caesar on the board. I don't think it would affect this choice.
Mm.
I would once again give the world the gift of my Cassius.
Oh my God.
I have, mostly because I'd like to try to play a role that I've already won an award for.
What award was that?
That was Best Actor, Best Supporting Actor in a play.
From which award?
The Academy.
Which Academy?
So, more importantly, moving back to the story. I don't want to make this about me because I'm a selfless man.
Mm-hmm.
Cassius is a great role. I think that the lean and hungry look is more, in my case, less about my trim physique.
Certainly.
And more about like that, like, just like that gnawing. He's like, this is a guy that can never be comfortable.
Right.
And it's like, even if you give him like everything, it's like, no.
Yeah.
You know what?
It's not right.
Something's not right here. Mm-hmm. I didn't say that. Like, it's just so much. Cassius is a character that's in his own way, which is always fun to play.
Mm-hmm.
And the scene, the tent scene is phenomenal.
Yeah.
The scene.
The two of them when they're at war and they're like, what? Yeah.
Like, we could do that. We were available.
Yeah.
Package deal.
Sure.
Do Caesar and Lear and Rep. You have Edgar Edmund, Cassius Brutus cast.
I mean, my mom would go. Definitely.
Right?
Hands
that's
down.
The ticket right there.
Mm-hmm.
So we should make that happen, listeners. Turn your car around. Unless you're driving to see our production. Just turn around. Just
in
call
protest.
Us up.
Yeah.
That's right. But no, Cassius is one of the only production I've seen of Caesar. Because unfortunately, I couldn't see the one that I was in.
Mm.
Was the Broadway production with Denzel, which
was
just like Cassius ripped Colm Feore, friend of the pod, future great friend of the pod, ripped that show right out of his hands.
Mm-hmm.
And was like, this is my show.
Mm-hmm.
And it was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So Cassius is, I'll happily take Cassius with the second pick.
There you go. So let us know how those roles or any of your other favorite roles are played in the production that you are going to see. This is the section of the show where we pull our favorite phrase from the play and talk through it so that you can nod smugly and knowingly when you hear it in production. The line we chose for Julius Caesar is, "He was my friend," from Act 3, Scene 2. Let's hear the phrase in context.
"Friends, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. I come to bury Caesar, not to praise him. The evil that men do lives after them. The good is oft interred with their bones. So let it be with Caesar. The noble Brutus hath told you Caesar was ambitious. If it were so, it was a grievous fault, and grievously hath Caesar answered it. Here, under leave of Brutus and the rest, for Brutus is an honorable man. So are they all honorable men. Come I to speak in Caesar's funeral. He was my friend, faithful and just to me. But Brutus says he was ambitious, and Brutus is an honorable man. He hath brought many captives home to Rome, whose ransom did the general coffers fill. Did this in Caesar seem ambitious? Let the poor have cried, Caesar hath wept. Ambition should be made of sterner stuff. Yet Brutus says he was ambitious, and Brutus is an honorable man. You all did see that on the Lupercal I thrice presented him a kingly crown, which he did thrice refuse. Was this ambition? Yet Brutus says he was ambitious, and sure, he is an honorable man. I speak not to disprove what Brutus spoke, but here I am to speak what I do know. You all did love him once, not without cause. What cause withholds you then to mourn for him? Ah, judgment, thou art fled to brutish beasts, and men have lost their reason. Bear with me. My heart is in the coffin there with Caesar, and I must pause till it come back to me.
Thank you, Dan. That was was my friend from Act 3, Scene 2. So, for a bit of context, this is the eulogy that we were talking about earlier that Mark Antony is allowed to give right after Brutus has outlined the reasons for Caesar's assassination.
I believe it's a googly.
The googly.
Yes.
This is obviously everyone knows friends, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. Which is kind of the reason why I think we wanted to punch this out, because that's where everyone else, all the part-time crooks, all of the amateur listeners are going to nod smugly and knowingly. And this is when you can lean over and be like, hold on a second.
Better line coming.
The good part's coming.
Mm-hmm.
There's really no more like that's the context.
You
the context,
right. Here, it's the googly.
Yeah. So I think we this monologue is one of the more famous ones. This is one, other than To Be or Not to Be, this is the one that if somebody's like, oh, I had to memorize Shakespeare in high school, they may have this one.
Right. It's in the top four.
Right.
With this, Queen Mab.
Right.
Once More, and To Be or Not to Be.
Sure. And so I something about this line that, Antony, this can be up to the actor how they want to play, whether Antony has planned this eulogy to go this way, or if he kind of feels the crowd coming
with him,
and he goes down that road. But I think, especially the way you played it right here, it's like that, when he says that, he's trying to be professional, he's trying to be, say the right thing with the conspirators, these 15 people just stabbed the most powerful man in the world.
Yeah.
It's pretty bold for Mark Antony to come out and like stir up the people.
Right.
Like their blood is literally still on their hands.
Right.
And he's like, I'm going to kind of color within the lines on this one, I guess, murderers.
Right.
But at that moment, it can hit him if played that way. He was my friend. And he's like, you know what?
Yeah.
I got to go for this.
I have to go. Now this is the moment, To Be or Not to Be. This is To Be for Antony.
Yeah, yep, totally. Yeah.
I have it right here. Yeah, there's a sense, the later portions, because this speech, when taken as a whole, I think when you think back on seeing a production, you're like, oh, there was that speech. But it's really in like four parts.
Right.
And this is the first one, and he has to take the pause at the end.
Right.
I think he comes in with a plan, and then it's in this moment where he's like, wait a minute. This guy isn't what he wants to say is he is my friend.
Right.
But that's the first time you name, I think that putting the strong stress on the past tense verb.
Yeah.
Is the first moment of recognizing, like, wait a minute. I was in the room. I saw this whole thing happen. And I walked into a room it's been chaos.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden in the moment, like, you realize, wait a minute, I can't really say he is anymore.
Right.
It's like a real...
It hits him.
Personal. I think that's how I'd like to see it played.
Yeah.
Is that he needs to pause.
Right.
Because if it's just like, let me take a minute, to step away.
No, that's not interesting.
That's really just like manipulative.
Right. Well, it's... I see. I think that I have seen it done that way where, he sees the crowd start to go and he's get... Because then, right following that line, I must pause till it come back to me, the citizens start to talk to each other.
Right.
So like, practically that's what is allowed to happen here by Shakespeare, but... that idea that it's like when, James Brown used to perform and like he'd be like, I can't go on. And he'd like go down and someone would run out with a cape and put it on and be like, I can! And he'd throw it off. It's like that. You can kind of have that too where it's like, but it's also practically Antony is like, I can't. Sorry, this got away from me.
Yeah.
Like he takes a break and like, you wouldn't play it this way, but it's almost like he's looking around like, am I going to get stabbed?
Now, right, am I next? How far can I go?
Right, he waits. He takes that beat to see if somebody's just, like if the stage manager's off stage, like motioning with the cut it. No, don't do that.
Yeah.
And nobody gives him that. So he's like, all right, let's keep dancing.
Right. Well, this is also, for Anthony, I think this is a major turning point because he's been, not just in the play, but he has been described as, not just a turning point in the play, but it's a turning point in Anthony's life.
Yeah.
On these four words, where he goes from being the hungover guy who's been partying too hard.
Right.
To being like, you know what? I think it's time to lead the free world.
Yeah.
I think it's time for me to show up.
Yeah. It's another Henry V parallel.
Exactly.
It's like, it's time to, my dad, not literally his dad, but, you know, his father figure.
Yeah.
His mentor.
Mentor, exactly.
Is dead, and it's like, my turn.
Here I come.
Yeah.
I gotta stop that showing up late and missing the
coronation.
Yeah. Because
I was late. Wish I showed up on time for Senate today.
Right. Coming of age time.
Right. So there you go. He was my friend. Keep an ear out for it when you go off to see this production. Here we will highlight the biggest practical challenge to the director of this play and share a few ideas on how it has been solved in the past. For Julius Caesar, we think the biggest challenge is the stage direction, Casca first, then the other conspirators, and Brutus stab Caesar, from Act 3, Scene 1. Dan, you want to give some context on this?
Yes, I'd love to. This is the moment of the assassination.
Mm-hmm.
So
you may have heard of it.
It's pretty important. spoilers, by the way, if you are driving to see the show knowing nothing about it.
Or Roman history.
And you haven't picked anything up until now. Spoilers, Caesar gets stabbed by everybody. It opens up with basically a couple of pleas, PLEAS, to Caesar. And then seemingly out of nowhere, Casca stabs, then the rest stab, and finally Brutus stabs Caesar.
Mm-hmm.
In this act of rebellion and regicide, I suppose.
Kind of,
not
yeah.
Not really regicide because it's not a king, but...
Yeah, it's assassination.
Assassination.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's not a lot of context there, but it's
yeah.
pretty much what it is.
Yeah, you know
it's
what
a murder.
It is. Yeah, and right. The challenge is that it's so many... It's going to be somewhere between 8 and 15 actors...
Right.
Killing someone quickly.
Yes.
Like descending on, and then, you know, and then they all have to, they all agree in the text to put their hands in the blood.
Right.
So it's like there needs to be, it's a tough thing to get away with without having at least some degree of stage blood.
100%.
You know?
And it's the moment of what is the story I'm telling?
Right.
As the director.
Yeah.
You got to figure out, you know. How does each individual character stab Brutus?
Mm-hmm.
Is it, how organized is it? There are
right.
so many questions
right.
about it.
Right.
And a fight choreographer is going to be really helpful.
Yeah.
But ultimately it is on the director to figure out.
But it's a challenge for a fight director too, just because of the volume of people, because it's like, you know, Edgar Edmund or whatever is a much, you know, it's a much more challenging, you know, it's a whole battle, like any of the histories, you know,
right.
there are all sorts of other fights, but this one where it's just so many people and yeah, you know, they're all going to have knives, even though they're
right.
prop knives and there's still a body underneath this pile. So yeah, it's tricky. Yeah.
And like, what is the imagery that you see
mm-hmm.
beforehand, during?
Yeah.
What's the image that you're left with? Is
right.
it just a massacre?
Right.
Or is it everyone gets like, you know, the old one stab eye to eye?
Right.
Like passing Caesar around like a ball.
Right.
Where you're like, oh,
my oh
turn.
Yeah.
Like, Decius
yeah.
Brutus, you.
Yeah.
And like,
yeah, he's doing like the action movie, like following from person to person.
Yeah. And then finally it's like he's falling down on Brutus with
yeah.
like blood streaming.
Yeah.
Or is it just like meet, meet, meet,
meet? Yeah, the one that I've seen most frequently is like he's standing there and talking and then he looks around and there's like a semicircle of people around him and he's like, hey guys, what's up? And then everyone just descends in circles and you just see a lot of like arms coming up
yeah.
and then they separate. But then you lose, when you do that, you lose the A2 Brute, the next line,
because
Caesar's
important.
Under a pile.
Right.
So then, yeah, then it's like, do you have one person at a time? But then you're watching Caesar die for a minute.
Right, right, right.
It's like all right, we get it. Stop it. He's already dead.
I'm following Decius' story, though. I need to know what Decius did. there was an it was really very fun. Actually, two exercises I will never forget from working on the show. And kudos to the director for doing them. One was we brought in basically... did some research on what it feels like to stab somebody.
Jesus.
So I think it was like a kitty litter bag that was surrounded in stakes and then covered in duct tape. Because what she was going for, the director was going for, was that it was not just like, stab.
Right. Like you need to put your back
into it. There was a hand motion there that went with that, which was just like...
Up jab.
Like a jab.
Yeah.
But like, it doesn't just go in.
Yeah.
So that the act of... And then it became very emotional.
Yeah.
Like putting something into someone and like,
yeah.
It's not just turning off a light switch.
Right.
It's a choice.
Yeah.
And the choice doesn't stop. Like you could stop it when the point hits.
Right.
Which was kind of, that was pretty interesting. But there was also one which was less successful of we put the, it was an actress playing Caesar.
Uh-huh.
Like in a white t-shirt and we all had Sharpies.
Oh no.
Just to see like all the different hit marks.
Yeah.
And like 4 seconds in, she was like, stop, stop, this hurts.
It's like, well, yeah,
we're stabbing her with a Sharpie. It's like, well,
she's paintbrushes.
Oh, happy go.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So anyways, that is what, that is the challenge that we're looking for here. Let us know how they deal with it in the production that you are going to see. All right, folks, that is going to do it for this week's episode. If you found this helpful, please subscribe, rate, and review us in iTunes so we can keep bringing Shakespeare to your headphones on a weekly basis. If you have questions or comments you'd like to send our way, you can email us at noholdsbarredpodcast@gmail.com. You can Patreon us at patreon.com/noholdsbarred. You can tweet us at No Holds Bardcast, or you can Facebook us at facebook.com/NoHoldsBardCast. So, until next time, I'm Kevin Condardo.
And I'm Dan Bullier.
So call the field to rest, and let's away.
To part the glories of this happy day. Yes,